Gotta clap.
Gotta clap. Gotta get it in.
There it is. Okay. I'm going to have some hot takes on this one. And just because it's my podcast doesn't mean you guys can disagree with me. So what we're talking about today is we all are creators, how to nudge yourself into innovation. So the hot take that I have that is controversial, most people don't agree. I think everybody is an entrepreneur. And I think, Justin, you said earlier today before we were talking that, like, entrepreneurs are just a sliver of people. And to be fair, you know, I was at that job thing, whatever, the something candy salad
community
thing,
candy salad,
some event, and it was all incoming freshmen, and they, some of them were, I don't know if it was freshmen, but some of them, they were, you know, majoring in business administration, and then they'd never thought of entrepreneurship, and right? And so I think my thought is that at its core, what entrepreneurship is basically creating things of value that other people are going to want to buy, right? And so the idea here is that whether you're going to be an employee, whether you're going to be an intrapreneur, or whether you're going to be an entrepreneur. So intrapreneur is someone who's innovating with inside of a company, right? All three of those, the way that you earn money is to be able to create more things of value, right? So, for example, I was just teaching this. I do a service where I go talk to kids who are in middle school, and I help them with their entrepreneurial club. And the way I explained it to them is, imagine you had a lemonade stand and you've got an employee that works for you and they can make 10 lemonades in an hour and you make $1 on each lemonade. I asked them, how much are you willing to pay the employee? And some of the kids, like, they didn't see where it was going. So they're like, I'll pay him $20 and I'll pay him $5. I'll pay him $1, right? And so then, like, I said, okay, so if you're making $10 and you're paying them $20, they're like, oh, yeah, I probably shouldn't do that, you know. But they realized, and so then I said, okay, so now what if the employee, they're able to find a way to get so many more people to come to your lemonade stand that you can sell 100 lemonades an hour instead of 10. I'm like, so now you're making $100 an hour. How much are you willing to pay the employee? So then they got it. They're just like, okay, well, this employee is going to make more money because they're bringing more value. And I said, well, if you fire them, then you go back to only 10, right? So you don't want to do that. So how much? So they were all willing to pay them around $50, $60, $70 an hour. So it's like, I'll pay them $99 an hour. I'd still make $1, right? But the point is, whether you're going to be an employee, whether you're going to be an entrepreneur, the core value is that you are creating value. So in that sense, I think that means we're all entrepreneurs. But I don't know. Do you guys have a different opinion on that?
Well, I would say that that's just what business is.
Okay.
Creating things of value. And so everyone within your business has to necessarily be creating something of value, or else they're not going to be working there. I would say an entrepreneur, though, is somebody who creates something from nothing, right? So they're the one who, there is no business, there is no product, there is nothing. They're the ones who create the lemonade stand. The lemonade stand didn't exist.
Yeah.
They created it and they started it. And then maybe they hire employees who, the only reason you would hire that employee is because they're creating value.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't call that employee, though, an entrepreneur. Because they didn't create anything other than, well, I guess they're creating the value, but they didn't create the business. The reason why I think that entrepreneurs are extremely rare is because it takes a weird alignment of personality traits. So you have to be what's called open to experience. That's like the number one trait of an entrepreneur. Means that they're willing to think of different ways of doing things, different ideas, And then there also has to be kind of a certain level of structure to them as well, which is kind of the opposite usually of what openness to experience is. So you have to be a little bit, you have to be conscientious too, so that you can kind of have like order and structure to it and not just spin your wheels changing all the time and thinking up new ideas, which entrepreneurs are usually good at. So I just think it's a rare combination of things, which is why they're, like in reality, there's not that many people who can do it or are even interested in doing it. It's just those kinds of people who are, because going and working in a business that somebody else already started feels boring and oppressive. And but for people who like that, they like the structure, the safety, the security, and all that. And entrepreneurs tend to don't put all that much weight on that aspect of business. They like more of the charge and the excitement that comes from thinking up new ideas and stuff. But so I guess that would be what my opinion would be.
No, I actually agree with all that. Those are good thoughts.
Well, I think there's a difference between being an entrepreneur and being somebody who adds value. Adding value to a system that already exists could just be running that system, because the system without somebody to run it doesn't do much.
Yeah, those people are value. I mean, it's not like they're less
they're
valuable
adding value,
than the entrepreneur.
But I wouldn't necessarily call them an entrepreneur. I would say that they are creative in the sense that they're taking something and producing something else with it.
Yeah.
And it could be they're taking their time, they're taking the materials, and they're taking this cloth and turning it into a pair of pants. But they're not being innovative. But they are in the part of the making something process. And I think people value all of us intrinsically being creative in that sense, where I'll even say I think that we are created to be creative. We are created to make things better, improve things, run systems so that they run smoothly, so that it's better for life, which is also we are created in some ways to be consumers, creators and consumers. And the pleasure that we get from consumption is a positive thing until it overwhelms the creative. So am I more in producing value or am I more in taking value? I was pondering this when I was thinking about online content. And you might think that as watching videos or whatever, you're the consumer. Well, that's not really true. You're the product, because whoever is creating that is selling your attention and selling your information to a third party. You become the product because you're pulled into becoming a consumer. I don't know if that makes sense, but
I know it does. They say if you're not paying for the product, you are the product.
Yeah. I hadn't heard it said that way. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it is.
So, but I do think that people within a system, as far as internal entrepreneur, is that what you call it?
Yeah, intrapreneur.
Yeah. I think that somebody who is part of the system can feel great joy in being the one to take this system and make it a little bit better and improvement. I think that we all have some wiring of, boy, I have a frustration from doing my job this way. If I only had a thing that I could just dip in water and wet these envelopes instead of licking every one. I mean, there's little ways that we can improve, and I think there's this spark of joy. And I think that's, so it might be on a spectrum. There's people who have little things like that, but then there's people like Justin is describing, which is a smaller sliver of society, that not only do they pursue advancement, different ways of doing things, creative things, but they also have enough of the structure to uphold that. It's like the structure being the trellis and the creativity being the vine that's growing. You got to have both.
What's a trellis?
What's a trellis? It's like a wooden grid that plants grow up, like a cucumber trellis or
flower
trellis.
Yeah, I know what a trellis is.
Yeah.
Sounds like a tralala or something from my kids playing their games. Okay, I actually was going to say a spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, let me rephrase what I was saying in the beginning, right? So I agree that, there's kind of a spectrum where on one end, in order to be an employee, you have to create some value. But if you're on the low end of like you're creating low value and it's very easy to replace you, that would be a very low paying job, right? And then on the other end, like sometimes you'll see a CEO that's making like $10 million a year or something. Maybe there's some sort of nefarious like a grift or something going on that got there. But I think there is cases where it's like, geez, this guy is so innovative, and he's, when he runs a company, we make an extra $30 million a year, so it makes sense to pay him $10 million, right? So it is a spectrum. And so I don't know, would we be in agreement that everybody has some little bit of spark in them to be like, oh, I wonder like if we could do this better, or do that better, or like even if it's just like, I love doing puzzles, you're solving a problem. I think everyone has some bit of a spark, maybe not everyone, but I think that, I guess we're all products of our environment to some degree, where what I'll say is I think everyone has the capacity to be an entrepreneur if they were put in the right environment.
Yeah, I would agree in that. I would say that if you want to see if that's true, then you try to find an extreme. An extreme person who is incredibly rigid in their routine, mm-hmm. who it just is incredibly emotionally disturbing to them if their routine is broken, mm-hmm. They're probably on the neurodivergent spectrum to the extreme. And so that's not the norm. But because it exists, it really highlights the fact that most of us aren't like that. Like most of us have developed our patterns that we have now because we've done things and we like them better. Mm-hmm. They may not be better for us, but we might like them better. Like, I'd rather sleep in. So I've developed this habit of always sleeping in. I want to look at my phone before I go to bed. Not best for me, but it's my habit. So we all have that. But I think there is. Everybody was trying to find a little bit better way, except for those that are incredibly on that extreme. Don't interrupt my very detailed pattern.
Yeah, maybe we don't say absolutes, but I think most people have the capacity to innovate if they were given the right environment and right kind of social pressures.
I don't think so. I think there's a whole segment of people that don't even have the capacity really to think like that, and nor the interest, right? So they would be sort of on the one fringe of the bell curve. You know, they would be, you can even just look around the world at different countries and stuff who are not even interested at all in improving or changing or doing anything. They just want to live the same way for thousands of years, right? There's no interest in changing.
Well, I think there will always be some people, but I'm curious what your thought is. Like, I mean, if we took a random sample of 100 people from across the world, what percentage of them do you think would have the capacity or interest, and not capacity, interest, if they were put in the right environment, that they would thrive as someone who is focused on innovation and solve problems?
I would say max 60%, probably.
Okay.
Probably something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say closer to like 95% is where I would say.
Yeah.
But you're
giving them way too much credit.
How many employees have you had, Ryan? Well, Ryan, earlier when you were bringing this topic up, it made me think, I wonder how much his own personality is projected onto other people.
I do that all the time.
Because you were like, I'm surprised that all these people weren't entrepreneurial. Yeah. I'm like, well, of course you'd be surprised because you're very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And somebody else might say, I can't believe you would even take that kind of risk. Why are they saying that? Well, it's because they're projecting their own fears, their own.
Yeah.
I prefer stability over being stretched.
Yeah. I'd be curious to explore that a little bit, because like for me, it's like if I I'm doing a job, right? And like I'm having to shovel, and I'm constantly thinking like, well, if we did two shovels and then we did this, then this would be more efficient. And I'm constantly trying to like solve problems. And my theory is that that's a trait of evolution. Like the people who do that end up creating, like innovating, create agriculture, create this, create that. So they're the ones that end up having offspring. That's why I think it's like pretty much everyone has it within them. And I'm curious.
Well, I would say that those are the people who built civilization where then all the people who aren't like that can survive in it.
Yeah.
Or else they would have all
died. Maybe they
out.
Have another role. Like sometimes yeah. the
somebody
society
has to maintain the civilization yeah. and yeah. you know all that. So the people who build it and you know adventure out and build ships to go across the ocean, yeah. you know, and all that kind yeah. of stuff is a different kind of person than
they're the weirdos.
Yeah.
But they work within an organization or a structure or a society.
Yeah, and I was going to say something more about that. What was it? Yeah, this isn't, you know, probably politically correct or whatever, but have you seen that Bear Grylls video where they take a group of women and a group of men and drop them off in, like, on islands that are
okay.
uninhabited?
No, I haven't.
And they're just, like, supposed to survive. So the guys start off already in a bad situation. Like, they just, like, jump off the side of the boat and have to, like, swim all the way to the shore, mm-hmm. you know? And the women, they, like, take right up next to the shore, and they just, like, get to hop off and go on the island. But after, you know, I don't know, a few hours, the women are lost in the jungle trying to find the beach on the other side or whatever. The guys just, like, instantly go over to the other beach. And then the women, like, break down, and they're crying, and they don't know what they're going to do, and they're infighting, and two of them leave, and these leave over there, and they claim they're going to go find some food, and they never find fresh water. They never find anything. And the guys, in the meantime, are all, like, working together on this beach, and they're making spears, and they're spearing fish, and they're, like, got a fire going, and they build huts, and they're dancing around and having a great time. And the women never accomplished anything.
I'm going to look that up. We're going to watch that for date night.
It's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
You know, they even gave the women more of an advantage to be able to do it, and they never built a shelter. They never built any tools. They never got any food. They never even found fresh water.
Yeah.
So.
And obviously,
they couldn't solve any of the problems, is I guess what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Obviously, that's like one anecdotal thing, and it's a group, but, you know, I'm sure there's probably a group of women that could be put together that could do great, right? But
I know the men that you could put together, and it would be terrible.
Well, it reminds me, there's another a video that I saw that was interesting, where they grabbed couples and they had them race against each other, and there was like these tasks that they had to do, and so they had an instruction sheet, and they're like, okay. You know, here's all the different tasks, and then the first one to finish wins, and they had, like, spouses competing against each other, so they were really trying. And, like, the instruction sheet said, read all the instructions and then start doing the tasks, right? And at the very end of the page, it said, if you don't want to do any of the tasks, you can just go to the end and press the button, right? And the men didn't read the whole sheet. They just started doing the tasks, and they'd be like on task three, and the woman hasn't even started yet, and she's reading all the reading the sheet because it told her to.
Uh-huh.
She gets down to the bottom and then just goes and presses the button, and it happened every time where the guy's like, he's like, you didn't do all the tasks. What are you doing? Like, this isn't fair.
That's
she's
funny.
Like, you know. So I think that maybe the point is that in a society, there's different roles that all can be kind of, so there's the crazy entrepreneurial people that like go out and innovate, but they're not very good at like following the directions or instructions or reading all the way to the end, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's spectrums of people that all kind of work together in society.
Yeah, I think that's why it's so dynamic and why it works so well. You know, it's because there are people who are different and have their different strengths and skills like that. You know, when you started saying that, the first thing I thought was, you should go to the end and read what's at the end. Yeah. That was the first thing I thought.
Yeah.
It's like, I would have got it.
You would have got it.
But that also is, you know, sort of kind of proving my point to where, so
you're kind of like a woman? I'm just kidding.
The women were more likely to, okay, this is what I've been told to do, so I'm going to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And they followed the rules and it worked out for them.
Yeah.
So that's not really, you know, that's not creative in any way.
Yeah.
You know?
It's also in an environment where the stakes are super high. And so all of the weight of got to get this done fast, got the emotion of, you know, what happens if this doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I think for a positive way, women in general are more in touch and more intuitive with the emotional weight of the experience. So that might have been a deterrent in that particular setting. But there could be settings where there's not as much at risk, and so they might not respond in the same way. When you're talking about evolution, it made me think of civil evolution and how societies evolve. And I think that's specifically the area that once you get a foothold in society having a baseline, that you have to have a solid base. And then once from that base, you have the freedom to be creative. So like if it took all of our efforts just to save up enough food for the winter, I liked watching, I can't remember the name of the show, it was a pioneer show where they would put people out on the frontier and they would have to clear land to plant food and build a place to live and cut wood to store for the winter and all the things. And at the end of the summer, they would test whether or not they had enough resources that they were going to survive the winter. If you're in that situation, you have to be innovative, but you don't have the freedom to be as innovative as if those things aren't fears. I've got plenty of food. I've got plenty of fire. I've got whatever. Now I have time and energy and freedom to be more creative and innovative. So I think once you get a baseline is when some of the entrepreneurial stuff can take off.
Yeah.
I think we're in a day and age where people can spend time developing apps.
Yeah.
Because they're not too worried about fighting off the wild beast that's going to break through the house.
And so we end up, yeah, a lot of times if we don't spend our time doing that, we end up like getting depressed, doom scrolling on TikTok or something like that. So that's actually a good segue. I kind of want to segue out of that and then into the goal here is we're talking more about the time freedom side more than the meaningful happiness side. And so the concept here is time freedom comes from being able to transition from trading your time for money to trading assets for money, right? That's a huge shift for a lot of people is thinking about what's something of value that I could create to earn money so it's not directly tied to my time. But even if you're not doing that and you just always, you're not the entrepreneurial mindset where you're going to go out and start your own business, you can still, by learning how to flex entrepreneurial or your innovation skills and learn how to develop those skills, you can gain skills that might lead to you getting the next promotion or the next raise and becoming seen as more valuable to whoever's running your organization so that you can earn more money. And so that by earning more money, hopefully you can achieve some of that time freedom that you were talking about. And so what I wanted to do is I have some ideas here of how you can create an environment that makes it easier for you to start flexing your innovation skills. And so we're going to see what AI thinks about this. So AI says that default bias is obviously a lot of these are going to have default bias. So, you know, people stick with whatever option is easiest or set by default. So one of the strategies that it talked about, an environmental strategy to make creativity the path of least resistance, keep a whiteboard or sticky notes in your workspace so capturing ideas is effortless. Default your calendar with a 30-minute weekly idea jam session so brainstorming happens automatically. That's an interesting one. So, like, you basically create a time where you're going to idea, like, just flex that muscle. Like, what are some ideas we can come up with?
You create a structure.
Yeah.
For freedom. Like, that's an interesting... It's kind of like what you said, you need to have the structure in order for the creativity to flourish. And that's what you're saying. Like, that's what AI is saying, is create a structure so that you have freedom to do the creative.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were actually even talking about earlier, is like when you create restraints, like I think you were saying, like when you can paint and you can only paint with numbers or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Constrain creativity really the way you can supercharge it is by constraining what you are being allowed to create with. So like the materials or the ideas or whatever. So that's how a lot of artists have done that over the years. So it's like only can draw circles. Well, how can you be creative if all the only thing you can draw is circles? Mm-hmm. So it forces you to, by boxing yourself in, forces you to come up with new, creative, different ideas. So is with this list, are you're trying to think of ways that people can think of ways that they can improve their in their business?
Yeah. Well, not even in their business. It's just like, how can we flex our creativity muscle and learn how to be more innovative, right? And so, or not how to learn, how can we create an environment that nudges us to flex that skill more naturally? Because if we're just going about our life in our default setting, maybe a lot of people don't have an environment that helps them naturally flex their innovation skills. So what this is saying is create a space on your calendar that says this hour is a creativity hour where I'm going to constrain myself. Like you're saying, like maybe, and I'm just going to create for this 1 hour.
And the purpose of doing that is to somehow gain time freedom in the long term run?
Goal? The end goal is that by doing that, either you're going to end up starting your own company that ends up making enough money so that you're detaching your work from time, like, right? So you're creating assets, or maybe you end up getting a promotion, so you end up making more money, and so you're able to not have to work as many hours to get the same income.
Yeah, I guess it's a little hard for me to understand because I'm not quite, it would depend in my mind so heavily on what you're trying to accomplish, you know? So if you're trying to move up in your job, for example, mm-hmm. then that's what you would be trying to be creative about, you know? And so, or if you want to quit your job and not have to work anymore, like that would be a different set of things that you would have to. And, you know, I think just basically like daydreaming about what your life would be like or how you would get there, and visualizing the path and you doing the tasks and all that kind of stuff, I think is a big thing.
So like a vision board type thing. Yeah. So the context that we're exploring this in is, okay, so that's creating a vision board would be good, right?
I wouldn't say you'd have to even create like a physical one. I could create one in your mind. I mean, that's basically what I did.
And what could you do? What could someone do in their environment that would lead them to start daydreaming more?
Start do that, yeah.
Right? That's what we're getting at.
Yeah, because people who are open to experience they daydream. They're daydreamers. Mm-hmm. There's the kid who's staring out the window in class, you know, thinking about things. Okay, so yeah, systems that they could set up that would encourage them to do that more. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like I do, like when I went out and I sold alarm systems door to door, right? I had like, it's hard like to keep yourself motivated, right? Because like you're dealing with a lot of rejection. People are like, what the hell are you doing on my door? We had one guy, it's kind of funny, to deal with the rejection. He ended up getting a stack of no soliciting signs. And when people would get mad at him, he'd pull out a no soliciting sign. He's like, well, I've got these two. These are $10. And so he was selling no soliciting signs door to door to the people that, and he actually ended up selling some alarm systems to people that thought that was like, he ended up kind of creating a
that's,
relationship.
That's similar
them.
To what my mind went to is like, how do you create the need? Will you hire your buddies to break into people's houses so that so that now all of a sudden everybody wants an alarm system?
We had a guy who did that too.
Don't do that. That's
In the nighttime, he actually went and busted a couple of windows in the neighborhood, and then he went to that neighborhood and tried to sell alarm systems.
What do you know? An alarm system salesman shows up.
Yeah.
That probably not
related. He ended up getting fired. But
well, you know, creating the space. I was just looking into, because I'm preparing for a talk that I'm giving on taking breaks in life and the value of that. And this one person was saying they have in their home a rule that a few different things. The phones are not in the bedrooms, and they use alarm clocks. Yeah. That's one. 1 hour every day where your phone is off, and it's during their mealtime in the evening. 1 day a week, like sundown on one day to sundown on the next day, where they shut off their phones and they put them in a drawer. And then 1 week a year where they have no access to their phones or to computers or whatever. And it's very hard for me to imagine, how could you do that? Well, initially it's hard to imagine, but then if you stop and you have that space to think about it, you can start thinking about how you could do that. And he was saying, not only does that help you reset so that your baseline is shifted, so when you see something later, you are more alert to if this is good or bad or true or not, because you've had a time to pull away. Yeah. But the creativity that happens in that time is so much higher, because you're not giving your focus externally. You're able to process and take things in. And I've thought about, what does it look like to create space for creativity like yeah. that?
So like maybe like, so just expanding on that, like you get rid of your phone, and then like maybe you like give yourself even more constraints or something, like during this time I'm going to have to do X, Y, Z, you know. So that's an idea. But like going back to what I was saying on the alarm thing, in order to keep myself motivated on the doors, I got a necklace and I put like my kids on the necklace, and it was like this thing, and I just wore it underneath my shirt so no one saw it. But like as I was walking, it would like hit me, and then I'd be like, oh yeah, that's why I'm doing this. And it helped me to stay in that mindset. So I'm just, so the point of this part of it is, what are the things that we can be doing to create an environment that would naturally lead towards innovation? So the vision board's a good one. You put that, but where do you put that vision board? Like maybe you put it covering your speedometer in your car, so you have to move it, and then you put it back every time. So like every time you get in your car, you're going to like, so those are the kind of environmental things that you could do to like kind of keep flexing that innovation.
The vision board thing I've been pondering, because people have said that if you just focus on the end, it's not as helpful as if you also focus on some of the means to get there. Mm-hmm. And I heard a guy talking about how he created a vision board, and then he would create of all the things that he wants to have, and pictures of what his life would be like, where he would like to travel, what his car would be, all that kind of stuff. But then he created another one that was like, what are the habits or the behaviors that I need in order to get there? Mm-hmm. And he put that in front of himself more. And every once in a while, he would go back and look at the end product, but he called it his B board. This is the person I want to be. And so he's looking at that, creating it within him. That's maybe not creating creativity, but if you're focusing on the type of person you might want to be, you might have to be creative in how you reschedule your life. And am I going to work an overtime shift so that I have a full day so I can just go walk in the woods? You know, whatever it might be, maybe you have to look at the B board in order to be creative on how to get there.
Hey, that walk in the woods, actually, that's a great idea, because there is something that happens that, and it's a researched thing where you get, your mind does open and you do get more creative when you go for a walk,
yeah.
Especially in nature. That would be something I would add to what people should do.
And my yeah. mind just went,
cause it's not that burdensome either.
I've got yeah. a little land. Yeah. I should create a path and charge people to walk in the woods.
Yeah.
Say, come be creative. Walk around in my yard.
I do that all the time. Like if I get stumped on something, I'll just start walking around the block. I'm sure everyone's like, oh, here comes that guy again, just walking around the block.
I heard it happens in the shower too. So if you could figure out a way to have people walk in the woods in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's called rain.
A walking shower. Yeah. Walk in the rain.
There's two others. I'm going to combine them because I think there's ways to combine these. So one's the fresh start effect. I noticed this a lot in my life. So like whenever you're like, there's a fresh start or something, like when I was growing up, we moved a lot. And so I'd go to a new school, and every time it was like a fresh start. Nobody knew who I was. I could kind of reinvent who I was. And so a lot of times in life, like a fresh start helps you to kind of, you know, do something new. So this was saying, you know, whether it's every Monday morning, you start with a micro experiment. So like, what's one small test I can run this week of or something, or maybe every month or on a birthday or, you know, an annual thing. So this is talking about a fresh start, like creating these fresh starts in your life that are attached to this innovation idea. And then the other one is the commitment bias. So once we commit publicly to something, we're more likely to follow through and stay consistent on that. So I think there's some ways that these could kind of be combined where you, like, maybe you get some friends or something and say, hey, every month I've got this goal where I'm trying to create something new or innovative every month, and I'm going to tell you the cool thing next month that I did, and then follow up with me if I don't at the beginning of the month.
I love that. I would wonder what it would look like if you have to be careful who you share it with.
Yeah.
Because if I've got friends, I'd say like a Justin and a Ryan, that would probably encourage me.
Yeah.
And would challenge me and say, did you do it? And I'll say no. And they say, well, you know that you want to. I know that you can. You mm-hmm. can do this. It's different than if I've shared my goal and somebody says, that's a terrible idea. I don't, you know.
I told you wouldn't do it.
Yeah. So I think the public thing, now I know there's personalities that if you tell me I can't, I'll prove to you I can. So if you know that's who you are, maybe that's who you want to share it with.
Yeah.
But I think in general, what you're talking about is people that will hold you accountable, but they want you to win.
Yeah. So, I mean, even this podcast that we're doing right now, like we almost didn't do it this morning but I told you guys we were going to do it. And then I started feeling guilty. I'm like, okay, it doesn't need to be perfect. Like I don't have all the episodes mapped out like I wanted, but we're just going to do the first one because I had committed to you guys and you guys showed up. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to do it. Right. So I think something like that, a ritual that happens and I think to your point, Jim Rohn, it's the guy mm-hmm. who said you're the sum of the average of the five people you spend the most time with. I think if you pick the right people, they can help you do it. So I think those are some good things that you could do to create an environment that would help you naturally start to flex your innovation skills.
So hang out with people who are innovative, hang out with people who are creative, people who value that,
yeah,
who aren't afraid of change. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Publicly commit to them something and, you know, create the vision board or something temporal like that you're going to have to see on a consistent basis. Like we talked about putting it on covering your speedometer. So you're going to have to move it and then put it back on there. So every time you have to move it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any other closing thoughts on this one?
No, I think those are all really good ideas, actually, I think.
One thing I would add, not necessarily to those things, but to this whole concept.
Yeah.
I believe that not only intrinsically, all of us have some level of creativity in the sense that we want to improve, might just be our own lives.
You'll have to arm wrestle him about that. Cause, you know,
there's definitely people who are much more wired in their temperament and their ability to see bigger and different, that really helps. I do believe that's true. But I think another thing that could be a driver is tapping into, it's not just for me.
Yeah.
Like part of my, like you said, your kids mm-hmm. on your necklace.
Yeah.
That's a thing that drives us. Like I want to be entrepreneurial and creative, not just because it makes my life easier or better, but people that I care about, it'll improve their lives. And it could start small, like me, and then me and my spouse, then me and my spouse, my kids, me and my spouse, my siblings, and, you know, keep going out. But I think a lot of the improvements have that piece of I gain from this, but also this piece of it makes things better for those I care about. And it can go all the way out to humanity.
Yeah.
Like, what would happen to the world if we could solve this problem? It would eliminate 20% of the hunger in the world.
Like, yeah.
So those kinds of things, I think, are also drivers for change. So maybe discomfort, personal or recognizing the discomfort in others, is also a driver to creativity and solve problems.
Yeah. Good thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.